This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
On April 8th, 1999, at the corporate headquarters of Pillsbury in Minneapolis, there was an impressive secret meeting among the CEOs and company presidents of 11 of the largest food companies in America: Nestle, Kraft, Nabisco, General Mills, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, Mars. Usually these people were in bitter competition with one another. Just that year, General Mills had muscled past Kellogg to become America's largest cereal maker, releasing a bunch of new products and flavors at reduced prices. They'd been dominating the dairy section with Yoplait, which turned yogurt into a dessert. It now had twice as much sugar as Lucky Charms, the company's sweet marshmallow-filled cereal. But because it still had an image as a wholesome food, its sales were over $500 million a year. So these CEOs were used to battling one another over what they called stomach share. That's the amount of digestive space one company can snag from the competition. So these CEOs were hardly friends. But they came together for this gathering for an important reason. The public's health was at risk. Research was increasingly showing that their company's products were causing obesity and other health problems. Michael Mudd, vice president of Kraft, a real industry giant, gave a presentation laying out the facts. More than half of America's adults were now considered overweight. 40 million of them were considered obese, at social cost estimated at some $40 to $100 million a year. Associated diseases like diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, gallbladder disease, osteoarthritis, cancer, all were rising. And more public scrutiny was coming down on the food manufacturers. Powerful critics in the media and the government were speaking out. So Mr. Mudd said if the food industry wanted to get ahead of the critics and survive to feed Americans another day, they needed to be proactive. And he put forth several proposals to address the obesity crisis, try to pull back on their use of salt, sugar, and fat, wage a strong PR campaign by finding ways to promote exercise, backing advertising campaigns showing a commitment to health. He said this: the industry should make a sincere effort to be part of the solution. By doing so, we can help to defuse the criticism that's building against us. We have to make a sincere effort to be part of the solution if we expect to avoid being demonized. When Michael Mudd finished his presentation, what do you suppose happened? How successful do you think he was in convincing these people whose livelihood depends on selling as much product to as many people as possible that they needed to do something that might make their products less appealing to consumers? Who do you suppose they decided to prioritize? The people or themselves? Probably the most powerful man in the room was the CEO of General Mills, Stephen Sanger. He had led his company in transforming whole sections of the grocery store, taking advantage of people's desire for faster, more convenient food. He was truly a giant in the industry, and he was sitting in the center of the front row. Three people who attended that secret meeting all verified what happened next. These are the words of Michael Moss in his book, Salt, Sugar, Fat. Stephen Sanger stood, his body tense, to address Michael Mudd, and he did so visibly upset. Sanger began by reminding the group that customers were, quote, fickle. Their concerns about the health implications of packaged foods waxed and waned. Sometimes they worried about sugar, other times fat. But most often, he said, they bought what they liked, and they liked what tasted good. Don't talk to me about nutrition, he said, taking on the voice of a typical consumer. Talk to me about taste. And if this stuff tastes better, don't run around trying to sell stuff that doesn't taste good. To react to the critics would jeopardize the sanctity of the recipes that had made his products so successful. General Mills would not pull back, Sanger said. He would push his people onward, and he urged his peers to do the same. Then he sat down. Now, Not everyone at the meeting shared Sanger's views, but his stance was so forceful, so persuasive, and yes, so comforting to the other executives that no one else sought to counter the position he voiced. Sanger's response effectively ended the meeting. So none of those executives changed any of their products. They didn't invest any money in research or public education. There was increasing public pressure, and they took some small steps to alleviate concerns. But this is what Michael Moss wrote. The reality was that behind the scenes, having resolved to ignore obesity, the CEOs and their companies picked up right where they had left off, using, in some cases, more salt, more sugar, and more fat to edge out the competition. There's been a tremendous amount of evidence linking these processed foods that are filled with sugar, fat, and salt to a range of health problems. The executives of these companies have come to rationalize all sorts of bad behavior that has harmed people to continue finding ways to sell more. Now, this is a powerful example of the dangers posed to us by greed and the ways of this world. Now, this is a widespread trend that is hurting the health of millions of people. We all have to eat, obviously, and food production is in many ways made very unhealthy because of this type of thinking on the part of these executives. But here's the thing. This is really just one example of how thinking that is ungodly and unrighteous and selfish and greedy, thinking that is in fact devilish, that is influenced by the devil, has terrible effects on our society. And my question to you is, can you recognize the devil's influence in today's world? If you can't, then it's very difficult to protect yourself from it. I want to read a few statements from the book of 2 Corinthians. This is the second letter that the Apostle Paul wrote to the congregation in Corinth in the first century. And there are several places in this letter where Paul draws attention to our real adversary. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4 calls him the God of this world who has blinded the minds of them which believe not. Chapter 6 and verse 15 of 2 Corinthians says we should have no communion with him or the ways of his world. We have to come out from that. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 3 says that Satan the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety, and he can beguile you too. He can corrupt you from the simplicity in Christ. And verse 14 of chapter 11 says Satan is transformed into an angel of light, and his ministers look like ministers of righteousness. So this apostle was very aware of Satan's power, and he tried to warn people about it, to be on guard against it. In 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11, he says we have to do certain things to protect ourselves, lest Satan should get an advantage of us. And then he says we are not ignorant of his devices or his designs or schemes. Satan is always looking for an advantage over us, like an enemy sniper. As in any war, ignorance of the enemy is dangerous. We're a lot more vulnerable to the devil if we're ignorant of his devices. The more you know, the better equipped you are to resist and fight. If Satan is laying a trap for you, you want to recognize it. If you're walking through a minefield, it's better to see those mines than if they're buried under the ground. You can look in chapter 4 of the Gospel of Matthew, and it describes this titanic battle between Jesus Christ and Satan the devil. And this chapter, this exchange, exposes Satan's most powerful devices. At the beginning of this chapter, it says, "Then was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward anhungered." So he was not ignorant of Satan's devices. Jesus Christ knew what he was up against. And then this is beginning in verse 3 of chapter 4. We'll look at three devices that are exposed here. Verse 3 of Matthew 4 says, "And when the tempter came to him, he said, 'If you be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread.'" Satan plays to your vanity and your desire for food. These are really two temptations that are rolled into one. These are two of our greatest weaknesses, the pull of the self, self-love, both in terms of vanity and in a strong desire to fulfill our physical appetites, feeding the flesh. Satan really plays on that and encourages that with food and the unlawful use of food. Verse 4, Jesus answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God." You really have to get into God's word and study and obey every word. Then came the second temptation. Verse 5, then the devil takes him up into the holy city and sets him on a pinnacle of the temple and says to him, "If you be the Son of God, cast yourself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest at any time you dash your foot against a stone." Satan encourages willful lawbreaking. You know that that thing is stupid, that it's wrong, that you shouldn't do it, but you do it anyway. And you may think, well, it's not really a big deal. God will bail me out. But here's how Jesus Christ answered. Jesus said to him, "It is written again, you shall not tempt the Lord your God." When we do what we know we should not do, we are basically tempting God to say, okay, well, you're just going to have to live with the consequences for that decision. Then comes the third temptation. This is verse 8. Again, the devil takes him up to an exceeding high mountain and shows him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them, and says to him, "All these things will I give you if you will fall down and worship me." Satan offers immediate gratification, taking the easy way out rather than being subject to God's will. Now, the world offers this temptation in so many forms. Discomfort, take a pill. Disease, get surgery. Depressed, have a drink. Eat some comfort food. You can't pay your bills, go into debt. You're not doing well in life, well, then just blame someone else. Whatever the sin is, don't worry. We're going to find a way to get around the penalty. That's what the world promises. But Satan is a liar, and all of those promises are lies. They are false promises. There is no shortcut to righteousness or to rulership the way that God wants to give it to us. You have to submit to God. You have to serve him and love the way that he works with you to develop his character in you. Jesus Christ answered in verse 10, "Get you hence, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve." Again, if you are ignorant of these devices, you're a lot more vulnerable to them. Do you recognize when Satan is using these devices on you? He tries all the time. They come in a lot of forms, thousands of permutations and variations. And in the program today, I just want to look at the world of processed food as an example of how Satan uses these devices. This is something we're all familiar with, and it gives a remarkably specific picture of how common these devices are, how easy it is to fall prey to them if we are ignorant of them. Look at modern industrialized food production, and you clearly see how Satan is involved here, and the lessons and the principles apply in many other areas if you think about it. Let's start by talking about vanity. Self-love, pleasing the self. This really is the foundation of so much of what you see from modern food production. Coca-Cola has been around for a long time, and this company is very good at getting people hooked on their product and has been for a long time. Way back, even in World War II, the CEO of the company publicly declared that every soldier in uniform would get Coke for 5 cents a bottle, no matter where they were stationed, no matter what it cost the company to get it to them. Well, that advertising campaign helped a whole generation of men and women to get hooked on Coke. They sit around, these executives, thinking, strategizing for how to get more people to drink more of their product. They've come up with ways of putting a Coke in people's hands, especially when they're kids, in places where they make happy memories, sports stadiums, movie theaters, amusement parks. They came up with the fast food combo meal, burger, fries, and a Coke. They came up with the coolers full of Coke next to the supermarket cash registers. They came up with all-you-can-drink beverage bars and soda fountains. They came up with big gulps and supersized beverages. For them, all of this represents success. More guzzling, more sales, more money. One former executive summarized their strategy. How can we drive more ounces into more bodies more often? At Coke, they focused on two numbers. The first is per capita consumption. They're always looking for ways to increase the amount of Coke drunk by the average person. The second number is market share. How much of the world's total soda consumption was Coke? Grow those two things and the company does great. The problem is, what happens when the average American drinks 54 gallons of soda a year? And every regular soft drink has 10 teaspoons of added sugar. 10 teaspoons. How many of you would scoop 10 teaspoons of sugar into a glass of tea and drink it? Proverbs 14, verse 21 says, "He that despises his neighbor sins, but he that has mercy on the poor, happy is he." God expects us to love our neighbor. The next verse says, "Do they not err that devise evil? But mercy and truth shall be to them that devise good." There are people who are devising evil. And these verses here talk about how important it is to have mercy on the poor. For long periods in its history, Coke has actually specifically targeted the poor, less advantaged areas where people were more inclined to be hooked. They'd market specifically to them to get them to drink more. Do you know 80% of the world's soda is consumed by 20% of the people? So these heavy users, as these executives call them, are very important to the business. One former executive said this: if you lost one of those heavy users, if somebody just decided to stop drinking Coke, how many drinkers would you have to get at low velocity to make up for that heavy user? The answer is a lot. It's more efficient to get my existing users to drink more. The rivalry between Coke and Pepsi has been called the Great Cola War. These two companies fought tooth and nail for market share. Coke crushed Pepsi in the 1960s. Pepsi won in the 1980s. Coke came back in the 1990s. But the real truth is, both companies won. In all those decades, sales of both of those products, both of those companies went up. They both won. And everyone else lost. Proverbs 23 and verse 6 says, "Eat you not the bread of him that has an evil eye, neither desire you his dainty meats. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, says he to you, but his heart is not with you. The morsel which you have eaten shall you vomit up and lose your sweet words." These people are not looking after your best interest. They don't care about you. And when you study into their tactics, it really gives you insight into how crafty the devil is in trying to play to our weaknesses, how aware he is of our tendencies, and how he'll hit us when we're most vulnerable. With these soda companies, one of their most predatory strategies is to go after teens. They put corner convenience stores on every corner right around the schools to catch kids coming and going. And these stores are full of unhealthy foods that are very cheap. This is what Michael Moss wrote. "To nutritionists, these stores are to obesity what drug dens were to the crack epidemic. Inside is a layout calculated to grab these kids at every turn. Up front are the stacks of soda bottles, joined by the racks of chips and pastries, with the soda cooler on one wall and inexpensive candies next to the cash register to snatch up any leftover change." Teens are very valuable to these food production companies. They spend less, but they visit more, and they get hooked on these products. Is it any surprise that teachers are complaining more and more about students who have jittery nerves and short attention spans and rising obesity and declining health? A former executive of one of these companies said, "None of the players stop to think about whether people should really be eating a bag of chicken wings and a bag of potato chips and a 2-liter Coke. They're thinking, is this going to get me an increase in sales?" This book Sugar, Fat, Salt was written by a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who's worked for the Wall Street Journal, Newsday, New York Times. This man spent 3.5 years researching and writing this book. And he writes this: "It had taken me 3.5 years of prying into the food industry's operations to come to terms with the full range of institutional forces that compel even the best companies to churn out foods that undermine a healthy diet. Most critical, of course, is the deep dependence the industry has on salt, sugar, and fat. Salt, sugar, and fat are the foundation of processed food. And the overriding question the companies have in determining the formulations of their products is how much they need of each to achieve the maximum allure. It's simply not in the nature of these companies to care about the consumer in an empathetic way. They are preoccupied with other matters, like crushing their rivals." So Satan is working on the self-love and the vanity of these manufacturers. But when it comes to consumers, you can find ways that Satan plays to our vanity. For example, the message in the advertising, making it cool to eat certain foods. But the far bigger problem is how he plays to our desire to please our senses, no matter what it does to our health. These food companies feed our cravings and stoke our cravings. And we've walked into this trap step by step, unaware of how we were becoming enslaved to our appetites. God made us to need food for our energy. He wants us to make wise choices. It really is a tremendous area to build and exercise and demonstrate character and self-restraint and to show God where your priorities are. For example, Proverbs 25 and verse 16 says, "Have you found honey? Eat so much as is sufficient for you, lest you be filled therewith and vomit it." But what happens if you live your life as if there are no rules regarding what you eat, if nutrition is simply not a consideration for what you put in your mouth? If that's the case, how can you tell if what you're eating is good or bad? Well, it's whatever tastes good, whatever pleases the palate. That is essentially how a lot of people eat. And in a lot of ways, food companies have taught us to eat that way. Industry insiders talk about the bliss point, the precise amount of sugar or fat or salt that causes consumers to have the most desire for their product. This is precisely engineered. Every product has to be optimized in order to sell as much as possible. These manufacturers are in the business of creating cravings. They optimize variables like color and smell and packaging in addition to taste. And they'll create and test thousands of versions of their products to get the best one. Now, when you think about this, there are obviously some important points to consider about nutrition here. But I'm not really focusing on nutrition, but on Satan's devices, on the temptations he throws at us and the messages he bombards us with to get our minds on self and off of God. He's gotten virtually our whole society to put tremendous priority on pleasing the palate rather than on fueling the body. If it tastes good, eat it. And of course, if you look at the broader trend, that's essentially how a lot of us live. If it feels good, do it. Now, if how something feels is your only standard of right and wrong, well, you're going to end up eating and doing a lot of very destructive things to yourself, breaking God's laws, his physical and spiritual laws. This is an extremely powerful device that Satan uses against us. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the addictive powers of sugar and two more of Satan's devices that you can see in the world of processed food. We'll be right back.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
Sugar has few peers in its ability to create cravings. That's what Michael Moss wrote in his book, Salt, Sugar, Fat, about the processed food industry. Food companies have found that sweetness makes everything sell better. Everything is more marketable. So guess what? They put it in everything. This is what one scientist said. I am still shocked at what goes on in this country, where every single food has some sweetened component that wasn't normally supposed to be sweetened. Honey wheat bread, honey mustard, foods that were associated with non-sweet or that had slightly bitter components have now been made sweeter. There is absolutely no tolerance now for foods that are not sweet. Sugar has become so dominant in processed food today. If you removed all the items containing sugar from a standard supermarket shelves, only 20% of the items would be left. Back in 2014, Australian filmmaker Damon Gameau made That Sugar film. Now, this man was eating no refined sugar, but he decided to try a diet for 2 months that included the average Australian consumption of sugar, which is 40 teaspoons a day. Now, 1 teaspoon is about 4 grams of sugar. And he decided not to get the sugar from sweets like ice cream or soda or candy. He got it from off-the-shelf breakfast cereals, low-fat flavored yogurt, baked beans, iced tea, hidden sugars that are found in the food and the drinks that are commonly thought of as healthy. So for his first breakfast on this diet, he had a bowl of Just Right cereal. This is made for health-conscious, athletic Australians. This has less sugar than Raisin Bran. And he had some yogurt and he had some apple juice. This meal added up to 20 teaspoons of sugar. You have to check the nutrition labels. I looked at Honey Bunches of Oats. That's a common cereal in the United States. One serving has only 6 grams of sugar. That's 1.5 teaspoons. But the serving size is less than a third of a cup. You take Honey Bunches of Oats and you pour out one third of a cup and ask yourself, who in the world only eats a third of a cup of a cereal like that? If you have 1 cup of this cereal, suddenly you're up to closer to 5 teaspoons of sugar. Just 1 cup. And how many people actually pour a cereal bowl with just 1 cup of cereal? Quaker 100% natural granola has 13.2 grams of sugar in a half cup serving. That's 8.5 teaspoons of sugar in 1 cup. Just imagine having a 1 cup bowl of unsweetened granola and saying, well, let me just sweeten this up a little bit, and dumping 8 teaspoons of sugar on it. The more sugar you eat, the more you crave. And children like it even more than adults, but part of that may be because the foods that the industry markets to children are so sweet. This is from Moss's book. It's not that food companies are teaching children to like sweetness. Rather, they are teaching children what foods should taste like. And increasingly, this curriculum has been all about sugar. And guess what? We've all been educated, quote unquote, in this way. Now, there are so many things about Satan's world that we accept as normal, but that are not normal. Satan is deceiving and brainwashing this world. The lessons from this one situation with sugar apply in so many areas of our lives. I think there's a precise corollary with what Satan has done to us mentally. All around us are sugary bits of mental content that give us a quick fix or a buzz that have no nutritional value and a lot of bad effects. And the more we indulge that, the baser our appetites become, the less we enjoy mental food of real substance, and the harder it is to keep our minds engaged where they need to be. The devil knows this. I'm sure that he has masterminded this. You just ask yourself, what is the sugar content in your mental diet? How much are you indulging in those little snacks that destroy your attention span and so on? How concerned are you about real spiritual and mental nutrition? Colossians 3 says, if you then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sits on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. Verse 5 says, "Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry, for which things sake the wrath of God comes on the children of disobedience." God really expects us to exercise some self-control and discipline in our lives. And this whole passage in Colossians 3 shows us what a contrast there is between the world's way and God's way. It's about strengthening yourself against Satan's ways of doing things by filling your life with the good things. Avoid those things that are filled with the leaven of worldliness. Build your appetite for the healthy things. Learn how to appreciate healthy food, uplifting music, quality literature, edifying conversation. We're talking about the solution to this device of Satan. Don't live by bread alone. Live by every word of God. Satan is trying to get you to prioritize yourself, pleasing yourself, living for those things that satisfy you. And Jesus Christ in Matthew 4 showed us how to resist that temptation. Live by every word of God. Focus on doing the will of God. That's how Christ conquered. He said in John 4 and verse 34, "My meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work." That's a wonderful example for us. Make it your meat to do God the Father's will. The second of Satan's devices is willful lawbreaking and thinking that God is going to bail you out. The matter of food illustrates this temptation extremely well. There are a lot of people who eat things they know they shouldn't, but they feel like it's no big deal. Everything will work out. We can be fairly casual about consuming things that are terrible for us and not really give it much thought. Obviously, God made us to need food. And the most important thing from God's perspective is the nutrition in that food. The most important things from the food industry perspective are taste, convenience, cost. Now, when you prioritize those things, you are going to end up with problems. You look at these food manufacturers, and what's interesting is the executives don't eat the food they sell. This is from Moss's book. They have personal trainers, gym memberships, and enough nutritional awareness to avoid diets that are heavy in the foods they manufacture. Now, that in and of itself is breaking God's law, which says you should do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Love your neighbor as yourself. These men know better, but they think they can get away with that. But the more fascinating thing to consider is the guilt of the consumers. Here's an interesting principle from the prophet Jeremiah in Jeremiah 5. Verse 25 says, "Your iniquities have turned away these things, and your sins have withholden good things from you." There are a lot of people who are in ill health, yet they keep going after these bad foods. They don't even know what good health feels like. They don't realize how bad off they are. This passage continues in verse 26. "For among my people are found wicked men. They lay wait as he that sets snares. They set a trap. They catch men. As a cage is full of birds, so are their houses full of deceit. Therefore they are become great and waxen rich. They are waxen fat. They shine. Yea, they overpass the deeds of the wicked. They judge not the cause of the fatherless. Yet they prosper. And the right of the needy do they not judge." Those executives, they might not be physically fat, but they've certainly enriched themselves at the expense of some of the most vulnerable people in society. And God says, "I'm going to judge you for that. You're not going to get away with that." But then you can see in verse 31, it says, "The prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests bear rule by their means, and my people love to have it so. And what will you do in the end thereof?" This is the worst thing of all. The people love it. People want these things that are making them fat and unhealthy and sickly. You can blame the companies, but the reality is if nobody bought their products, they wouldn't make them. The real problem is the sins of the people. these terrible foods that these companies are producing. This is what people want. And even when they're confronted with the truth about these things, they still want them. And consumers punish companies that try to give them something healthier. They just don't buy those things. There's been a lot of pressure on food companies over the past couple of decades to do things about the obesity problem and other health problems that their products create. Right around 2000, Kraft Foods decided to take responsibility and make some real changes. They started advertising real amounts of sugar, fat, and salt on their products. Like what's in the entire bag of the product rather than what these ridiculous small serving sizes were. And they tried to cut those ingredients down in their products. Well, guess what? Sales tumbled. Through the summer and the fall of 2003, their stock prices dropped 17% while their competitors rose 5%. In that sugar film, it talks about those great cola wars, and it goes into Kentucky, where Pepsi won with their product Mountain Dew. In one 2.5-liter bottle of Mountain Dew, there is 37 teaspoons of sugar and 40% more caffeine than in the same size bottle of Coke. And there was a dentist who converted RVs into mobile dental clinics to reach towns where people wouldn't make it to the dentist, especially in eastern Kentucky, the Appalachian region. This is the poorest part of the state. And he sees teeth problems, the teeth problems these people have because they're drinking Mountain Dew all day long. You have kids who drink 10 Mountain Dews in a day. There are people who are putting Mountain Dew in their baby's sippy cups. And this dentist calls it Mountain Dew mouth. And he showed one kid, this is a 17-year-old boy named Larry, who needed 26 teeth extracted because they were all rotting. And he was going to get dentures at 17 years old. And this film had a lengthy segment of this major ordeal that this dentist went through trying to numb his mouth to do the extractions, and the anesthetic wouldn't work because he had so much infection in his mouth. So the dentist said, well, we're just going to have to do this another time. And at the end of the segment, the boy told the filmmaker he still loved Mountain Dew and would continue to drink it. We need to look at ourselves and examine ourselves for how well we're keeping God's laws of health. You can't just eat whatever you want, drink whatever you want, treat your body however you want, and then expect God to take care of you. This is what Michael Moss wrote in his book. He talks about how the executives of these companies go out of their way to avoid their own products. But most of us can't simply stop eating processed foods. We are still scrambling to get out the door in the morning in one piece, or to please picky eaters, or to put a decent dinner on the table without getting fired for leaving an office early. Many of us have taste buds that are still jacked up on big doses of salt, sugar, and fat. For pleasure or convenience, we need our frosted mini wheats and our salt and vinegar potato chips, not to mention a few Oreos, to get us through the day. James 1 and verse 22 says, but be you doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. We've got to be doers. Satan is always encouraging us to just do as we please. Don't worry about the law. Things will work out. God will take care of you. Christ said, no, you shall not tempt God. God expects us to do what we know to do what he teaches us, to follow through. Most of us know what we need to eat for good health, at least to some degree, to a reasonable degree. We just have to apply it instead of just casting that aside, ignoring it, and doing what we please. The third of Satan's devices revealed in Matthew 4 is taking the easy way out rather than being subject to God's will. And this is another device that is fascinating to consider with respect to processed food. Satan offers instant gratification, and nowhere is this truer than with processed food. During World War II, when America's GIs went to war, women entered the workforce. And after the war in the 1940s, they never really went back to the home. Women leaving the home gave families more money than time. And when they left the home, that created a void, and the food companies stepped in. Michael Moss calls this an epic moment in the food business. He writes, the family-owned American grocery store was fast evolving into the supermarket, and food manufacturers were scrambling to fill the shelves with time-saving innovations that fed directly into the country's frenzy to modernize. One man in the marketing department of General Foods coined the term convenience foods. And Michael Moss calls this a phrase that would galvanize the industry for decades to come. They went through the process of making instant pudding. General Foods was committing to using pure ingredients. But then a competitor came up with a product that used a blend of synthetic products. And the executives told the chemists at General Foods, forget the rules, do whatever you have to make instant pudding. Well, soon they found the right recipe. And it had a pyrophosphate and an orthophosphate. And they never looked back. They learned that, quote, the use of an additive could tap into and help shape an entirely new way of thinking about food. So the ads for these products emphasized the fact that it was quick, that it was easy. You can make it and serve it at the very last minute. These kinds of products were making life easier for consumers who were increasingly harried by modern life. One executive called convenience the super additive that is changing the whole face of competitive business. At a meeting in 1955, this man said food, clothing, and shelter were still important, but now there was a fourth essential element of life that could be expressed in a single word, convenience. Convenience is the great additive which must be designed, built in, combined, blended, interwoven, injected, or otherwise added to or incorporated in products or services if they are to satisfy today's demanding public. Modern Americans are willing to pay well for this additive to the products they purchase, not because of any native laziness, but because we are willing to use our greater wealth to buy fuller lives, and we have therefore better things to do with our time than mixing, blending, sorting, trimming, measuring, cooking, serving, and all the other actions that have gone into the routine of living. Michael Moss wrote, "The decline of scratch cooking wasn't a corporate plot, as much as it was a foregone conclusion when women acquired greater roles in American society." So these innovators started coming up with breakfast cereals, and they used every trick that they could find. The sky was their limit, Moss writes. The only constraints were that they had to be easy to buy, store, open, prepare, and eat. Now that's a big change. And people assume there would be no real cost. The wife can work outside the home, and we can feed the family good food. It's a win-win. The fact is, there's a lot of work to be done in the home. The home needs keeping. There's a lot of work involved in feeding a family nutritious food. Now, this is controversial, and it's looked down on today's society, but if you study the Bible, God wants women to be keepers at home. Titus 2 and verse 5 uses that phrase, keepers at home. That means caring for the house, working at home, the watch of the house, taking care of household affairs. If that job is neglected, there is a price to pay, as there always is when you go against God's design. James Benke is a chemist who worked for Pillsbury for 26 years. He's the company's chief technical officer, and he helped create a lot of hits, including microwavable popcorn. Moss writes, he didn't blame himself for creating high-calorie food that the public found irresistible. He and other food scientists took comfort in knowing that the grocery store icons that they had invented in a more innocent era, the soda and chips and TV dinners, had been imagined as occasional fare. It was society that had changed so dramatically that these snacks and convenience foods had become a daily, even hourly habit, a staple of the American diet. Whenever we ignore God and stop serving God and start following our own ideas of what works, we're going to run into problems. And in the end, we end up serving Satan. And he is not such a nice master. In Matthew 6 and verse 24, Jesus Christ said, "No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." If you decide you're going to serve mammon, then that becomes your master. And it is a tyrant. And these food companies know this firsthand. There are some who want to produce healthier items, but they can't. Food companies are practically forced to spend as little money as possible in making their products. Here's a quote from a chemist at Pillsbury. Cost is always there. Companies had different names for it. Sometimes they were called profit improvement programs or margin enhancements or cost reduction. Whatever you want to call it, people are always looking for a less expensive way. Now, the further down that road you go, the more compromise and law-breaking you embrace. In a sense, you have no choice. You have to serve your master. Competition in the food industry is exceedingly fierce. Space on grocery store shelves is at a premium. Stores want products that move. They want products that sell. Store managers have one rule. The most space goes to the biggest sellers. Michael Moss says supermarket real estate is so precious, in fact, that consumer scientists have conducted experiments in which they place devices on the heads of shoppers to track their eye movements as they roam the store. And the gleanings from these studies has helped define the pecking order on the shelf. When a company tries to market a better-for-you product, it doesn't sell. With even tiny slippages in sales, the groceries get upset. Food company executives lose their jobs. So these companies end up doing things that they never would have dreamed of doing when they started up. One really interesting aspect of this subject is the packaging and advertising. Food manufacturers go to incredible lengths. It has to look as alluring as possible. Now, you go back to Genesis 3 and you look at the account of Satan tempting Eve. This was his first device that he used on Eve, the forbidden fruit. It looked good. Satan advertised all its best qualities. Do you know, with breakfast cereals, food manufacturers now spend almost twice as much money on advertising than on the ingredients in the cereals? And a lot of their strategies involve creating the appearance of something healthy. You add a splash of real fruit juice so you can put that on the box, even though it's very negligible and the rest of the product is heavily processed. They'll use fruit juice concentrate. This is being added to a huge number of products. Now, the process by which they make this concentrate basically strips the fruit down to pure sugar. There's no nutritional benefit over table sugar or high fructose corn syrup. So why use it? Well, one industry scientist says the advantage that the fruit juice concentrate people have from a marketing standpoint is this product appears on labels in a very healthy context. They can actually put "contains real fruit" on the box. Satan is a liar. Don't believe him when he offers the easy way out. I want to play a clip from a television commercial from 2008 for Kellogg's Frosted Mini Wheats. Now, this is set in a classroom, and the commercial begins with a teacher losing her train of thought, and this commercial promises to help your kids get better grades.
Okay, where were we?
We were on the third paragraph of page 57, and you were explaining that the stone structures made by ancient Romans were called aqueducts, and as you're writing that up on the board, your chalk broke into three pieces.
Right.
I've never been so proud.
The commercial ends with a voiceover saying, a clinical study showed kids who had a filling breakfast of Frosted Mini Wheats cereal improved their attentiveness by nearly 20%. Keeps them full, keeps them focused. The only problem is that was totally false. It was a study paid for by Kellogg. The claims did not hold up. The Federal Trade Commission opened a legal proceeding. They called it false advertising. It took them a year to issue a decision barring Kellogg from using that claim. But guess what? By that point, Kellogg had stopped using the ad after 6 months of successfully running that ad that boosted its sales. And one survey found that 51% of adults not only believed that Frosted Mini Wheats made kids more attentive, but that only Frosted Mini Wheats did so. The Apostle Peter warned in 2 Peter 2, verses 18 to 19, "For when they speak great swelling words of vanity, they allure through the lusts of the flesh, through much wantonness, those that were clean escaped from them who live in error. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are the servants of corruption. For of whom a man is overcome, of the same is he brought in bondage." Now, this is a spiritual principle, but this is at work everywhere around us. Satan uses this world to try to entice, and people make things look good, but they are enslaved. There is no substance in Satan's counterfeits. You remove the sugar, fat, and salt from these foods, and the magic is gone. This is what Michael Moss wrote. "One of the biggest food manufacturers let me in to observe their efforts to cut back on salt. Kellogg, for one, made me a saltless version of their mega-selling Cheez-Its, which normally I can keep eating forever. Without any salt, however, the crackers lost their magic. They felt like straw, chewed like cardboard, and had zero taste. The same thing happened with the soups and meats and breads that other manufacturers, including Campbell, attempted to make for me. Take more than a little salt or sugar or fat out of processed food, these experiments showed, and there is nothing left. Or even worse, what is left are the inexorable consequences of food processing, repulsive tastes that are bitter, metallic, and astringent. The industry has boxed itself in." In 1 John 2, verses 15 to 16 say, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world." And Jesus Christ said, the solution is you shall worship and serve God alone. He has your best interest at heart. Just obey him. Do as he says, and everything will work out. God really wants to help us in our warfare against Satan. He knows we have a fierce enemy. You get delivered from one temptation. That's not a once-for-all experience. You don't yield to one temptation. That doesn't mean you're not going to be tempted again or the next time you'll be that strong. Temptation must be continually battled, and we have to continually trust in God. The temptations of Jesus by the devil continued throughout his ministry. After that 40-day temptation was over, the Bible says this in Luke 4 and verse 13, "When the devil had finished every test, he departed from him until an opportune time." Satan is going to keep coming after us, and we have to keep looking to God for help and deliverance. Satan is so active on so many levels. They say that every good story needs a villain. And the executives, the food executives of these companies, they aren't the real villain here. They're part of an entire system, an economic, industrial, and societal system that has step by step over a period of generations become an insane world with human nature thriving unchecked at every turn. It's a perfect storm of greed and self-concern and lust. And at the center of it all is the devil. Luke 22 and verse 31, Jesus Christ said, "Satan has desired to have you that he may sift you as wheat." 1 Peter 5 and verse 8 says, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour." With food, we've got to get away from the processed stuff. God made good food that works, that fuels us. Yes, it's not easy to do, but you would do yourself a huge favor by just simplifying your diet. Michael Moss wrote this about the products of processed food. "They are knowingly designed, engineered is the better word, to maximize their allure. Their packaging is tailored to excite our kids. Their advertising uses every psychological trick to overcome any logical arguments we might have for passing the product by. Their taste is so powerful, we remember it from the last time we walked down the aisle and succumbed, snatching them up. And above all else, their formulas are calculated and perfected by scientists who know very well what they are doing. The most critical point to know is that there is nothing accidental in the grocery store. All of this is done with a purpose." Don't be ignorant of Satan's devices, or he'll get an advantage on you. Moss wrote, "It is perhaps not unreasonable in this scenario to think of the grocery store as a battlefield dotted with landmines itching to go off." This is from a guy who saw the industry inside out from the top people in the business. He wrote, "If you accept this, then it becomes all the more apparent why the food industry is so reliant on salt, sugar, and fat. They are cheap. They are interchangeable. They are huge, powerful forces of nature in unnatural food. And yet for us, knowing all this can be empowering. You can walk through the grocery store, and while the brightly colored packaging and empty promises are still mesmerizing, you can see the products for what they are. They may have salt, sugar, and fat on their side, but we ultimately have the power to make choices. After all, we decide what to buy. We decide how much to eat." Verse 32, Jesus Christ said, "But I have prayed for you that your faith fail not, and when you are converted, strengthen your brethren." Jesus Christ is with us, and he gave us the battle plan. He exposed Satan's devices. He exposed the devil's tactics, and he showed us how to conquer them. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that'll do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send me any thoughts on today's program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to Nick Irwin and Dwight Falk for engineering and production. I'll leave you with this thought from Thomas Jefferson: health is worth more than learning. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.